poisonous mist? Lifra considered simply destroying the gem, but wasn't sure that that would solve the main problem. Instead, she needed to look around and find clues. This should be the very center of the pit, so... Lifra picked a random direction and started running, keeping her eyes peeled for any sort of abnormality. Once she reached the far wall, she stretched her arm out, pressing it against the wall. She took a step, and a glowing blue mark was left following her hand. With a grin, she started running parallel to the wall, keeping one hand on it at all times. As long as I keep going like this, I'll be able to see where I started if I make a full circle, she shouted aloud, picking up her speed. The entire time she continued to scan her surroundings, wanting to make sure that she didn't miss any slight details. Lifra had no idea how long she ran, simply continuing to move along the outer perimeter of the pit. Her mini-map indicated that she had covered just over half of the circle, when suddenly she felt her hand leaving the wall. Or rather, the wall crumbled away as soon as she touched it. Oh, I found the plot! She turned to face the section of the wall that had crumbled, breaking down the rest of the nearby wall. What she found was a long hallway made of solid marble. The end of the hall having been cut off by some strange incident and covered with a thin layer of rock. Lifra skipped over to the door at the other end of the hallway, tapping her chin. This door seemed to be holding back the mist, just like Asnod's airlock. If she opened the door, the mist would rush in, destroying any traces that could be on the other side. Gods, I love being a slime, Lifra snickered, dropping into a small gelatinous form. The ground beneath her melted as she consumed it, eating her way into the room beyond. However, after she passed down beneath the surface, she left a thin layer of her body behind to act as a barrier. Upon reforming on the other side of the hall, Lifra found that the pink mist was completely absent. She could send her power out and observe as much as she wanted. Though it was dark within these halls, Lifra was able to produce enough light to see that this was far from a primitive construction. All along the hall there were thin layers of crystal that reacted as soon as Lifra released a bit of mana, lighting up to illuminate the area. Oh, magic civilization! I'm liking this already! Lifra thought about retrieving her compass, but decided not to. Her compass wasn't suitable for navigating indoors, as it only pointed out a direct route. Instead, she just had to search manually and see what there was to find. There were quite a large number of doors, showing that this used to be a vast underground complex, but there was no sign of any remains. Granted, with how high of a floor we are, anything born here would be an energy being and likely not leave behind a body when they died. So, that's not too unusual. Most of the doors were unmarked, and Lifra could only open them to reveal what looked to be old bedrooms, the furniture inside having long rotted away. When she finally came to a door with unfamiliar writing on it, a wide grin appeared on her face. You think that you can deceive me with a foreign language? I am the apostle of the goddess of stories. Golden light began to shine from Lifra's eyes, illuminating the sign on the door. Immediately, Lifra blinked, turning and continuing to walk down the hall. Why'd I have to get so dramatic for the bathroom? She continued walking, finding more bedrooms, offices, and closets along the way. Eventually, she managed to find a warehouse, shelves lined with decrepit goods. Of these goods, Lifra immediately noticed one item in particular, a blue crystal sphere. Her eyes widened, immediately recognizing the level sphere. So that's where you were hiding. She picked up the sphere and shoved it into her inventory, turning around to leave the warehouse, only to pause with wide eyes. Oh, that's a thing. Along the walls around the exit door, markings had been carved into the wall, matching the language that Lifra had already gotten used to translating. Unlike the sophisticated design of the rest of the structure, these carvings were crude and uneven. Still, they told a story. As long as someone ignored the giant "No Escape" written directly above the door. Lifra focused, finding the starting point of the text and reading it. "If anyone finds this place, I am sorry. For all that we have done, for all that might still happen, I am sorry. We wanted to change the world, to unlock the infinite secrets of the arcane. In the early days of our civilization, we found two mysterious crystals, one rough and purple, radiating immense power, the other smooth and spherical, matching the great spire. We wanted to understand these things, and so we studied them. For generations, our world evolved. We developed magic by accessing the heavenly stones. We learned of runes and advanced techniques, but we never mastered these two crystals. All that we learned was that the rougher crystal had the meaning of nature, but were unable to decipher what that meant. At times, there were those who wished to absorb the power of the rough crystal. However, this was strictly forbidden. There was only one such crystal, and its loss would set our progress back centuries. Instead, we took shavings from it, allowing these shavings to be absorbed. Those that did so began to harness the power of wind and fire, without the need of magic. Finally, we believed that we had an epiphany. The blue crystal was a guide. In order to fully utilize the power of the rougher gem, we needed to refine it into a similar size and shape. At this point, we had long been shaving pieces of it, reducing its mass, so we believed this to be an acceptable test. We constructed an altar, upon which we inserted the now refined crystal, and our most powerful mages sought to activate its power. There was an explosion, one that reached all the way to the surface, and the world was flooded with a pink gas. Everyone outside has died, every person, every animal. Every building has melted, every trace of our existence gone. There's no hope. I'm sorry. There is no escape." Lifra blinked upon reading the writing on the wall, crossing her arms.
Wait!
She shook her head, calling out to Terra.
"If you shave off a large majority of the primordial relic, it would corrupt the power of the relic, right? That's what happened here?"
"I wouldn't say corrupt, more degrade. Maybe you could call it twisting. Judging by what you found, the power of the nature relic was degraded to the point that it couldn't properly exert its power anymore. Instead of acting as the primal force of nature, it only had the power to mutate natural energy."
"Then what was with the giant mouth I jumped into? Is this thing alive or not?"
"That was a crater. And I've always said that there wasn't any life on this floor. Even Dale knew that."
Terra responded in an awkward tone. Lifra let out a faint huff.
"I wanted a boss battle, though," she muttered under her breath, making her way back to the entrance she had found.
If this was a lab, it was unlikely that she would find any important data, as the research rooms would have been closer to where they conducted the test for the purpose of monitoring. And given the size of that crater, all of such rooms would now be destroyed. It was better to remove the offending object and let the others come down to help investigate. Once she reached the pit again, she simply walked over to the gem.
"Dear gods, this feels so anticlimactic," she said, turning her arm into a giant pickaxe and simply smashing the gem. "Be gone, rock!"
When the gem was shattered, it no longer released any pink mist, the altar beneath it crumbling under the force of Lifra's strike. However, that didn't mean that the pink mist would immediately dissipate.
"I'll have to call the Munchkin over, but in the safe lab, where this isn't going to become a biohazard zone for her, maybe she can purify the natural energy here."
Chapter 61. After Lifra vanquished the mighty beast at the bottom of the pit,
definitely how she told that story. She invited Asnod and the others to descend in their ship. The pit was more than large enough for the entire ship to land at the bottom. While waiting for them, she worried about how to deal with the issue of an airlock for the lab. As soon as she opened the door to let them all in, some of the pink mist would naturally get inside. Even if she made a second door and opened them one at a time, the mist that got in when the first door opened would follow through to the second. She didn't know if this mist could contaminate regular natural energy now that the altar had been destroyed.
"No other way, huh?"
she muttered to herself as the group landed, the boarding hatch opening up. Everyone descended in their hazmat suits, looking around.
"More peaceful than I expected," Petra said, in surprise.
"Yeah, I was bummed out, too," Lifra agreed. "Okay, everyone, come over this way, and let's explore some ruins."
The others nodded, having heard about Lifra's discovery, and so they walked over to the hallway that she had found. They stood in front of the stone door, looking it over to find a way to open it. At the same time, Lifra split off a clone of herself, which stood at the entrance of the hall.
Nom, nom, she called out, opening her mouth wide and inhaling.
The pink mist nearby rushed into her body, and more specifically, her mouth. As she absorbed more and more of it, her body went from white to pink, gradually expanding until she was large enough to alter her form and become a second door. Lifra grinned at the success of her plan.
"The mist is corrupted natural energy, so I had my clone absorb it like I would natural energy. That should be more than enough to let you all explore inside without those suits."
"It really hurts, though,"
the new door complained.
"Is this what it feels like to eat spicy food?"
Petra shook her head with a chuckle, reaching up to take the helmet off of her suit. Seeing as her skin hadn't started to melt, the others all saw that it was safe.
"Now, how do we open this?"
"Try using mana," Lifra suggested. "The civilization seems to be heavily focused on magic, and there are crystal lights inside that react to mana."
Petra blinked, nodding her head and stepping forward, placing her hand on the door. There was a small blue pulse from her hand before the door shook, opening just a crack.
"Looks like it's been eroded too long to properly open," she said, digging her fingers into that crack.
Petra gave a small grunt, pulling the two halves of the door apart with minimal effort.
"Can your avatar hold out until we're done here?" she asked, looking back at Lifra.
"Yep. If I need to, I can just replace that door, too,"
she assured with a wide grin. Petra simply nodded her head, closing her eyes and taking a deep breath. Her shadow expanded down the hall, the lights briefly flickering. Without the acidic energy stopping her, she was able to instantly map out the entirety of this underground facility.
"I found something," she announced to the others, turning and leading the way.
Asnod and the others followed behind Petra as she navigated her way through multiple corridors, eventually leading them to a single massive door.
"Ooh, I smell quest rewards," Lifra said with shining eyes.
Petra simply shook her head. The door didn't seem to have any method of directly opening it, so it was likely locked from another location. Holding her hand out, she conjured a giant black axe.
"Everyone, step back."
Lifra's eyes widened, quickly moving back from the small demoness together with the rest of the expedition team. With three swings, Petra cut out a large section of the door, storing it in her shadow. On the other side, with various devices connected to it, was a large black stone wall. Lifra blinked briefly when she saw that.
"Ah, they wanted to keep all their mysteries in one lab?" she asked,
to which Petra gave a nod. "A wall that couldn't be moved. You said the level sphere was here too, and a relic of immense power." Petra walked forward, placing her hand on the gate. "For the time being, this is a safe zone, so we can bring priests here to register the gate."
"I'm a registered priest of Aurovi," the expedition leader said with a nod. "If we manage to find the gate, it was precisely my job to do this."
Petra smiled before looking at the scenery on the other side of the gate.
pursing her lips. The next floor. It's not going to be comfortable, but at least it doesn't look inherently fatal. She could see a dense layer of ice covering the other side of the portal. Lyphra rolled her eyes with a grin.
"Need me to go nom us up some space?" she asked,
to which Asnod shook his head. "If you devour the ice on the other side and then retract your body, you will be creating a vacuum. Though we don't technically need to breathe, it could create problems for us in another way. Let me take care of this one." As he said that, he placed his own hand through the gate, a black flame erupting from his palm and spreading outwards. His eyes were closed, the scene on the other side of the gate obscured by his flames.
"How's that different from me going in being all nommy nommy?" Lyphra asked with a pout.
Asnod simply chuckling. When he pulled back his hand, he revealed a large cavernous space beneath the ice. He had erected a number of metal supports reaching up to the ceiling to brace it. "I filled the interior with air and provided support structures to ensure that the entrance won't collapse on us. I thought that would be bad."
"That would be very bad," Petra nodded in response to Asnod's words, before stepping through.
As soon as she did, her shadows surged outwards, seeping through the ice around them. She closed her eyes, taking in the information being fed to her by her shadow.
"Reminds me of the 26th floor," Lyphra said with a faint pout,
following Petra through with the others.
"That floor tried to eat me, too."
"This is a bit worse than the crystal maze," Petra responded, a deep frown on her face.
"What did you find?" Asnod asked, looking over at her. He had a certain understanding of how the world's shadow worked, thanks to Udana.
"Aside from what looked like a few scattered air pockets, this entire floor is frozen, from top to bottom. There don't look to be any paths to move anywhere, so we'll need to make our own as we go."
"That's inconvenient," Lyphra pulled a face, shaking her head. She knew more than most how large these floors were. "Even if we dig in a straight line, it'll take ages to reach anywhere. We're getting to the point now where we'll need warp engines, even within the atmosphere of Fjord."
Petra nodded her head in agreement.
"This is going to be a long-term project." She turned her head, looking at the expedition leader. "For now, you can call out some people to make the starter city here. I'll stay behind, just in case there are some monsters in the ice."
"In that case, I'll go call a friend to see if I can help purify the previous floor," Lyphra said with a grin, hopping back through the gate and leaving the others behind.
In order to avoid being interrupted by the others, Lyphra ran through the halls to find one of the bedrooms, before clearing her throat and calling out,
little friend, I've got a favor to ask," she shouted, carving green runes in the air with one finger.
There was a faint giggle in response, and a brown-haired halfling girl appeared in hiking gear.
"Hey, Lyphra, it's been a while," she said, before looking around with a pout. "Yep, you can probably already tell what I want to ask, so can you do it?" Lyphra asked with wide, blinking eyes.
The girl hesitated, thinking it over for a moment. Afterwards, she shook her head.
"No, I can't clear this much natural energy on my own, not without risking it spreading to the other floors through me."
Lyphra pouted when she heard that, but the spirit continued.
"However, there is an item that could help me." "I sense adventure,"
Lyphra's face immediately lit up, staring at the girl, who nodded her head.
"In order to get the item, you'll need to face powerful creatures capable of devouring spirits. I haven't been there in a long time, but I remember James told me once that their levels were around 4,000 to start. There are probably some a lot stronger than that. You'll need to be incredibly careful." "Why do you look so excited?"
The world spirit of Fjord looked at Lyphra in confusion, who was practically bouncing in anticipation.
"Adventure! Adventure! It's a real quest! Can I go? Please, can I go?"
The world spirit hesitated before nodding her head.
I need a gem found in the nests of these creatures. The more you gather, the faster I will be able to purify the natural energy of this floor. However, there isn't a gate where I'll be sending you. Once you get to the other side, the only way back will be to call me again, and I will open a path for you. After saying this, the girl opened a green portal next to herself. Lifra simply shouted, "Adventure!" one last time, before jumping through with a manic grin. Once on the other side of the portal, Lifra was able to sense the peculiar traits of this region. It was absolutely flooded with natural energy, to the point where the very ground released a green glow.
"This place is perfect for me."
Hearing a growl behind her, Lifra's head turned all the way around on her shoulders, seeing a white wolf monster. Her lips parted in a wide grin as she observed its trembling growl and sharp, almost crystalline fangs.
"A puppy! Are you here to play with me, puppy?"
The wolf lunged forward, jaws snapping tight as it passed by Lifra, biting off one of her arms. She looked down at the stump of her arm and then at the wolf.
"Aw, you wants to play fetch. Okay, boy."
The arm that the wolf had held in its mouth shifted, turning into a large stick. Afterwards, numerous branches emerged, wrapping around the head of the wolf to lock it in place.
"Try to keep a good grip," she said as she walked over,
regrowing her arm and grabbing one end of the stick.
"And fetch!"
She threw the stick, and the attached wolf letting them both sail high into the air and off into the distance. Lifra watched the departing wolf disappear into the horizon, waiting for a moment.
"He's not coming back, bad boy."
She pursed her lips before the stick attached to the fleeing wolf's maw began to glow brightly, erupting in a torrent of flames that reached high into the sky.
"If you're going to play fetch, you always have to run back with the stick."
Chapter 62. I sat at my desk, going over the reports that Sun delivered to me. These weren't any major emergencies, but rather a summary of recent news that were deemed important for me to know. For instance, the discovery of a new floor of Fjord and its circumstances. This wasn't the first floor to have an Arctic theme, but it was the first one that had to be entirely dug out from one gate to the other. Even worse, Petra had no idea where the crystal spire was to use her tracking spell, because the entire thing was covered in ice. Thus, there was no room for a shadow to form when she scouted the terrain. Thankfully, there weren't any other influences in the atmosphere that would prevent tracking. Although Petra couldn't do it, there were a large number of gods that possessed domains relating to tracking. Once they brought one of those in, it would probably not take too long to locate the gate. Though getting to it was still another matter. Reading through the report, a copy of the message Lifra had uncovered was also included. Apparently, that civilization had access to the special mana stones of the 28th floor, though I didn't see any of them when I scanned through the area. Most likely they had been dissolved, thanks to the mist. Moving to Codex Chaotic, Cece had helped to prepare a summary of basic statistics. Now that the game had been out for a couple of weeks and the ranking system had been launched, people were starting to play the game more. I won't say logically, since it involved the void, but more carefully. There were still those that overestimated their own abilities and died due to having too strong of a void beast. At the same time, there were those that put themselves in a grand position of power, only to be assassinated before ever seeing a trace of the void beast. However, most people had begun to take the game as it was meant to be taken, as a training experience. They gave themselves settings that they genuinely wanted to live out, while keeping it within a range that they could handle for the void beast. Something that I didn't expect was another report that Sun sent me, related to the release of Codex Chaotic. Ever since the game was released, there had been a noticeable decline in the use of recreational facilities throughout many worlds. From an analysis conducted not only by the artificial intelligences, but also several behavioral experts in the world,
people saw less need to socialize in the real world. It wasn't like I didn't understand this. You could create your dream lover in Codex Chaotic. You could make a world where even an introvert could be surrounded by friends. It was easy for someone to get all of their social needs through this game. The problem was that if this continued, and social activities continued to decline, the nearly utopian society that had been built in many lands would turn into a dystopia instead. How do I stop that from happening? There were a few options, such as limiting the amount of time people were allowed to play Codex Chaotic in a single day. This would force people to take more time to themselves and connect with the real world. However, if I made the time allotted too short, people would easily forget the details that they needed to remember when hunting down the Void Beast, thus removing the point of the game in the first place. I leaned back in my seat as I thought about that, another thought coming to mind. Hermes, can you please call Cece? I would like to speak with her for a moment.
Sure thing, boss.
The voice of the messenger rang out before disappearing. After a few more moments, another voice appeared in its place, this one softer.
Is there something that I can help you with, sir?
There might be. I nodded, crossing my arms. Thanks to the ranking, we have taken a step in solving the issue of people not taking the game seriously. Now, however, are you aware of the negative impact from people playing too much? Cece spoke in a confident tone.
Indeed. This was something that was considered during the creation of the game. However, the specific method of resolving this problem was ultimately left to the keepers, who would purchase the game for themselves. There are too many cultural variations for a plan to cover every circumstance. When making a foolproof plan, never underestimate the ingenuity of fools? I asked, with a chuckle, nodding my head. I have one idea that I would like to propose, and you can give any input on it that you need. Please, go ahead. Her response was swift, so I was sure that she had already considered what I was about to say. My proposal is that we require people to pay a certain amount of money to maintain the simulation. This is true for both before and after its completion. I can imagine this having a number of varied effects based on the consumer. For those with money to burn, it will be little more than a minor annoyance, and their play habits won't change much. However, for those that would feel the pinch from this charge, they will have to consider whether it is worth the money to get their social experience from the game that they have to pay for, as opposed to meeting their friends in the real world. The main purpose of the game is to train against void beasts, after all, with therapy merely as an added bonus. There was a brief pause as Cece considered my words. I understand. Should I implement a flat rate to cover all forms of simulations, or should simulations be ranked based on their difficulty level or other factors? That's not an easy question to answer.
The main issue at the moment is the lack of real-world socializing. Those using Codex Chaotic to replace their social life would be doing so through low to medium difficulty simulations, rather than high power ones. Tell me what you think about this. Everyone has to make an initial payment when first creating their simulation. This initial payment will then cover the first 72 hours of playtime within the simulation. After that, they are billed weekly based on their hours played, and can choose to prepay as well. However, the price should be the same no matter what difficulty level the player requests. If I made the subscription monthly or based on real time, it might have the opposite effect of what I wanted. It would go from being a bother to pay to instead a case of, I've already paid for this month, so I might as well get the most of it.
I see. Cece thought about it for a few moments before replying. I believe that there will be substantial negative feedback to this change, but that would apply to any change that would incentivize players to only play in moderation. Additionally, unlike Fragments of Acidia, Vision Expanse, or World Seed, there are no direct ways for people to make money in Codex Chaotic, as it is designed for single-player use.
That's right. Though, I thought about it again when she mentioned that. We could potentially change that
for people that truly want to become experts on targeting void incursions.
May I ask what you mean by that, sir?
It's simple. For players that exceed their 3-day limit, they will be charged to continue the simulation. However, if someone completes their simulation within the 3-day limit, they can instead be rewarded. You can base their rewards off of their final score, but the minimum reward should be a full refund of the initial simulation cost. Of course, this only applies to people taking simulations suitable for their ranking. We don't want experts repeatedly creating low-level simulations that they can immediately solve just to rake in the reward money. After I finished my explanation, Cece briefly went silent.
If I am to understand your desires, sir, you wish for casual players to be incentivized to play more casually while maintaining their real-world social life. Meanwhile, hardcore players will be incentivized to play more seriously in the hopes of being paid for their efforts?
That's right. I nodded my head in confirmation. The purpose of the game from the start was to train experts that could identify and confront void monsters. If I squash that goal just for the sake of getting casual players to socialize more, it would make the entire game lose its value. Thus, for those truly serious players that can resolve high-level void threats within 72 hours of play, I want to make sure that they are rewarded as any expert in a major field.
I believe I understand your intentions, sir. Cece spoke up respectfully. Is there anything else that I should be aware of before I implement these changes?
I hesitated for a moment before nodding. There are a few people that I would like to exclude from the payment requirements. First, the incarnations of the Greater Pantheon and others who have access to the admin room. I'm sure you know who they all are. These people would typically only play the game for proper training of one sort or another anyways. Additionally, there is one other person that I believe should be excluded. It's a girl that came to my world from an invasion in the past, but decided to stay with me at the cost of betraying her original allegiance. I don't know exactly what simulation she has created, but I can guess. She lost everything she had the moment that she decided to join me, so I don't want to charge her for her happiness.
You are referring to the girl named Mara, correct?
Cece asked, to which I nodded my head.
I understand. Are there any other VIP exceptions that you would like to register?
I thought about that, shaking my head.
Not at the moment. I may think of others to add in the future, but that should be enough for now.
Mara had a bright smile on her face as she returned from town, having grabbed herself some much-needed groceries. Well, she was a goddess, so her groceries were in the form of energy supplements. She could technically survive by extracting the divinity within divine currency, but proper divine supplements had been created that were far more efficient. Once she was done putting everything away, she ran up to her room to grab her gaming helmet.
Log in to Codex Chaotic, she shouted happily, ready to return to the family that she had created within the game. Now that they had fully understood what was happening and had accepted her, Mara was happy to spend as much time as she reasonably could within the game, only stopping when she needed to urgently do something in the real world. However, instead of being thrust into the body of her avatar, Maya, Mara instead found herself in Cece's office, the silver-skinned girl sitting behind her desk with a small smile. Mara's eyes widened, dozens of panicked thoughts flashing before her.
Did the simulation expire or something? Why didn't I log straight in?
Cece held up a hand, gently.
The simulation is just fine. I pulled you here because I am preparing to make a major announcement. However, before that, there is something that you specifically need to know.
Mara gulped, nodding her head. When Cece began to explain about the upcoming change to Codex Chaotic and the need to regularly pay to maintain a simulation, Mara's face lost its color.
Cece maintained her smile, however, repeatedly insisting that Mara hold off any questions until she was done talking. Mara knew that she had a rather generous allowance from the Keeper to help with her daily expenses, but she wasn't sure if that would be enough to cover the continued usage of the simulation, as well as all of her other needs. Thankfully, Cece ended it with one last sentence. The Keeper has specifically instructed that you will not be required to pay for your simulations, she said, catching Mara off guard. Cece snapped her fingers, and a holographic screen appeared over her desk, showing the scene of the Keeper describing Mara so Cece could identify her, and the reason why he gave her this exception. Mara blinked briefly, her cheeks reddening.
Why didn't you just lead with that? She asked,
feeling as if she had been taken for a roller coaster. Cece, meanwhile, simply blinked.
If I told you that you were exempted without letting you know what you were exempted from, you wouldn't have properly understood the situation. That is why I asked you to reserve any comments until I was done.
Mara sighed reluctantly, nodding her head.
Then, thanks. And can you make sure to thank the Keeper for me as well?
Cece smiled at that.
I will pass your message along. Now, I do not believe that there is anything else you need to concern yourself with, so I will let you log in normally and wish you a happy experience.
Chapter 63 Lifra hacked away at the dense foliage around her with a machete that seemed to grow out from her arm. Her clothes had changed to a brown jacket over a tan shirt, brown pants, and a wide-brimmed hat. In her left hand, she held a bag that contained a single green gem. Squirt said that she needed more of these, but where are those dens? She had been lucky enough to find one den shortly after her arrival, but her luck had not continued to pan out for her. The natural energy world was far smaller than the floors in the 60s, but it was still incredibly large.
Why aren't the puppies coming to play with me anymore? It's no fun if there aren't any challenges along the way.
Though she complained, Lifra had a fairly good idea of why the spirit-hunting wolves weren't tracking her anymore. The first one could be explained as desperately defending its den, but others wouldn't take the initiative to hunt a creature of a higher level than themselves. If there were one of those stronger variants that the world spirit had mentioned, that might change things. But she hadn't run into one of those.
Well, let's see what we find, she said,
the machete arm growing exponentially as she swung it, clearing out a wide swath of trees and even cutting into a large hill. Once the clearing had been made, she took flight, aiming to escape the canopy before the natural energy had the ability to regrow the trees she had just cut. As she flew up, the severed trees surged around her, leading to her only just being able to escape. Her eyes widened, seeing a massive star of water hovering in the distance above. Off to one side, a star of stone, and to another, a swirling vortex of wind. She could already guess that the last one would be a true star of fire. However, she did not see a ceiling here, nor did she see any black stone walls in the distant space. This region did not follow the same structure as the rest of Fior, causing her to focus.
This should be the source, then? I wonder what will happen if I try to make a lightning or a shadow star here.
She shook her head, dismissing these thoughts. If this was one of the four pillars of Fior's creation, that implication was far more terrifying than just an additional layer. Now Lifra understood why she had never seen those spirit-hunting monsters before. It wasn't that they were native to this place at all. Instead, it should be because they were native to another planet within Fior's realm.
Wait, does that mean that the other people from James's race aren't from the planet Fior either?
Lifra asked in shock, eyes widening. She had fought one of them in the past, but knew that they had the ability to pass through the minor gaps to enter other planes. That was how James had managed to become known in the first place, after all. Lifra held her head in both hands, though one was still a giant machete, and shook her head quickly.
No, don't think about that. We're only a few floors from knowing the truth, either way.
Right now, I need to get the shinies for the squirt.
Lifra turned her focus back to the world of lush forests, her eyes focusing. She applied world sight to her gaze, scanning over the forests to look for any sign of the gems that the world spirit had been seeking. However, after a few minutes of staring, she blinked.
I may possibly be an idiot.
She took the shining green gem out of her bag and placed it into her inventory. Going through the options, she found the button to register the item in her digital conversion profile.
I may definitely have been an idiot.
She puffed her cheeks out, crossing her arms and simply standing there for a moment to sulk, her machete disappearing. Afterwards, she let out a sigh.
Little friend, it's time to go home, she said, in a tired tone, a green portal opening next to her.
When she walked through, she found herself in the same bedroom from which she had departed. There, the world spirit was waiting for her with wide eyes.
You managed to find them already. I knew I could count on you, she said brightly,
not noticing Lifra's despondent expression.
Yeah, yeah,
Lifra sighed, pulling the gem out of her inventory.
Is this what you were looking for?
That's it, the world spirit nodded, before blinking and noticing something. How many more do you have?
How many do you need to get it done quickly?
Lifra countered, causing the spirit to blink again.
Well, if they are this big, about 800 should do.
When Lifra heard that number, her eyes widened again.
You expected me to find 800 of these? She asked, raising her voice.
The spirit shrank back in surprise.
No, I thought that maybe 5 would be good, but it would take me about 10 years to do it without destroying the gems.
Okay, 5 is way more reasonable. I'm sorry for shouting.
Lifra patted her chest.
So, 800, right.
She opened her system menu again and pressed a button under the curious gaze of the world spirit. Suddenly, pure natural energy rushed into the bedroom, condensing into a gem identical to the one that she had retrieved from her inventory. And then another, and another. The world spirit's eyes widened, seeing the power of the digital conversion system firsthand for the first time. She knew what the system was, in theory, but had never had a reason to witness its use before.
Wait, where are you getting that energy from? That system should pull natural energy from the surroundings, but there's not enough of it unpolluted in this layer for even one gem.
She cried out in shock upon realizing that the 10th gem had already been created.
Perk of being the Keeper's servant.
I have an admin account.
Lifra shrugged as if it was something normal.
The energy comes straight from the void. Wish it could go a bit faster, though. But I guess that's because of how thick the world barrier is. Still, at this rate, I'd say it'd take a little over an hour for all of them to finish.
The world spirit looked at Lifra in confusion, with one gem appearing roughly every 5 seconds.
Right. I'll take these to get started,
she said, as she gathered up the couple dozen gems that had already been made. Afterwards, she walked out of the room, leaving Lifra to sit down on the bed and wait for the gems to all be finished. Outside, the world spirit had created a simple vine necklace to hang one of the gems around her neck. When she reached the exit of the underground lab, the slime door opened for her without hesitation. Pink mist began to flood in, but was pushed back as soon as it approached the world spirit. Once she had made it outside, the door closed again, a pair of eyes blinking at the top of the door to watch her. The world spirit grabbed one of the gems from the bundle in her arms and threw it into the air.
Come, play, little ones, she shouted, and tiny sprites began to rush out of the gem, circling it in the air.
Wherever the sprites passed, the pink mist seemed to be erased. These were lesser world spirits, those that acted with a swarm mentality. The girl smiled, watching them.
Let's get rid of all this nasty mist, okay?
One of the spirits rushed out to nod at her before flying back into the swarm, which carried the gem around the pit. In less than a minute, the entire base of the crater was fully revealed, and the gem began to fly upwards. Afterwards, she began throwing the other gems out in groups, more and more swarms of world spirits appearing and carrying them up into the gradually clearing sky.
"So, when you said you needed 5 of them originally," the door spoke, causing the world spirit to jump in surprise.
Yeah. I'd just have to move more carefully," she admitted.
Between the gem's ability to release pure natural energy and the world spirit's getting rid of the corrupted energy, it was just a matter of keeping up with the flow of power. The door opened again, spitting one several dozen more gems, which the smaller girl controlled to fly into the air, each one summoning another swarm. By this point, the top of the pit was already visible, and even the sky above it could be seen.
"Once you have all 800, how long will it take?"
Hearing the door's question, the world spirit thought it over.
"A week? This layer is super big, but that's not a problem for us. Once the little ones get started, they'll call more and more over, and they can move far faster than light."
"Well, at least Petra will be happy," Lifra chuckled. "By the way, is there anything you can do about the giant iceberg that is the next floor?"
The world spirit blinked, closing her eyes to investigate.
"There isn't anything inherently stopping me. In theory, I could melt the entire world, but that would cause everything to be swept up by a flood instead. Also, it would probably freeze again in a few years if I did it like that."
"Huh? But why, though?" the door asked in confusion, spitting out another pile of gems that was quickly launched off.
"The mana spire on that floor has a strong ice element. Every floor has a different basic elemental attunement that contributes to the ecology of that floor. That's why you'll get really hot floors or cold ones, or ones with massive storms. The tamer the attunement, the more normal the floor. This one leans heavily towards cold, so it will naturally release blasts of cold during the day when it is in mana release mode." Somehow the door managed to pout.
"So we just have to deal with it?"
"Unfortunately," the world spirit confirmed. "I don't know about the future, but right now there isn't any method of changing the spire's attunement. Look at it this way, though. It's a type of adventure, right?" she asked with a smile, causing the door to groan.
"Digging a 1,000,000,000-kilometer tunnel in the ice is not a fun adventure,"
the world spirit chuckled before shaking her head.
"If it makes you feel better, once the energy here is cleared up, monsters should begin spawning, so you'll be able to help with that while they get the gates protected."
That seemed to perk Lifra up a bit, her eyes fully opening.
"I guess that would be fine.
Beats running off to Deccan to fight random monster gods in space."
"It does?" the world spirit asked in confusion. "That sounds much more like an adventure."
"Yeah, but it takes ages to find them. Plus, after V-Day, pretty much all of the monster gods roaming space have been killed, so all of the ones left are newly born. They won't have any major combat experience. Give it another century or two, and it'll be worth hunting."
"Right."
The world spirit blinked. Chapter 64 The changes to Chaotic Codex were met with mixed reception. For the more casual players that enjoyed living a fantasy life, free of worldly burdens, they were outraged that their time in the game was now being charged. Even though Ashley's company released the fact that this was to encourage people to not forget about the real world, few people accepted this change. After all, everyone believed that they were managing their own time properly, regardless of how much time they spent in the game. For those hardcore players that were in it for the challenge, they were instead happy. Although the simulation cost money to start, the idea that they could get a prize for swift completion filled them with hope. Several even planned to make the game their career. Until then, the biggest complaint about Codex Chaotic was the fact that there was no way to earn money off of it, unlike other games that the Keeper had released.
Some people completely quit the game in outrage, saying that their time was better spent on other games, while others became more deeply invested. Although the popularity of Codex Chaotic plummeted, there was no change to this policy from Dark Flame Technologies. Rather, it seemed that this was the reaction that they had been hoping for. The only potential downside was that some people began complaining that Dark Flame would charge a similar payment model for other games, though they had no intention of doing so. After all, people could still socialize with others as much as they wanted in other games. While it wouldn't bring more business to the offline facilities, it prevented a situation where everyone was lost in a single-player game. Lyra took a deep breath, somewhat nervous. Leowyn had already explained to her the functions and benefits of being a companion, though Lyra herself still found it hard to believe that she was living among Leowyn and the Keeper now. She was the first of what was being called the Heroic Spirits. When she realized that it had been 50 years since the Battle of V-Day, she was shocked. She had just been talking to Leowyn for a short while, and half a century had already passed. Leowyn simply explained that time worked differently for them, and Lyra would get used to it before too long. The first thing Lyra needed to do was create her mortal incarnation. Although it would take quite some time before that incarnation grew, this would give Lyra more connection with the mortal world. At the moment, she could only descend into the void, borrowing its power to sustain herself. However, Leowyn had assured her that she would have more freedom when her incarnation matured. Lyra's gaze swept through the world, choosing a pair of expecting elves and closing her eyes. Now that she had made her choice, everything else was a matter of waiting. Giles stood atop a golden branch, his eyes cast out into the depths of the black sky beyond him. "How long until we reach the next destination?" he thought, hearing a gentle voice echoing in his mind. "We should be there within the hour." The voice was powerful yet sweet, causing Giles to release a small smile. "Is your daughter ready?" he asked, the voice suddenly becoming more shy.
"Our daughter, please," the voice corrected, causing Giles to release a silent chuckle.
He stood atop the branch of a massive golden tree, which had attached itself to an asteroid, flying through space at incredible speeds. Even stars flashed by before he could fully process them. "Is our daughter ready?" he corrected himself.
"She is. Latia of Wisdom will be ready when we land. I'm sure that she will be able to handle the forest."
"Wisdom, huh?" Giles nodded. He and Sprigga had taken it upon themselves to conduct a rather unique mission, repopulating habitable planets that had their populations eradicated by the events of V-Day. Because Sprigga had become a goddess, she had the ability to turn into a tree and back again at will, and could produce one golden sylvan every year. Thanks to this, they had created almost 50 new groves on 50 different planets. "Let's take a break after this one," Giles spoke to her in a gentle tone. "So many cuttings must be taking a toll on you." He knew his wife better than anyone, and so he knew the pain that she had to go through every time they created a new grove. After all, they were not merely creating the golden sylvan. Following the method of growing a tree from a single branch, Sprigga had Giles cut off one of her branches every time they landed on a new world. Doing so hurt immensely, but she was able to regrow her branch during the following year. Still, the repeated cuttings must have had an effect on her.
I'm fine, Sprigga assured him, though he could tell that her voice was weaker than usual.
"Sprigga," he spoke, his voice more firm. "We're taking a break after this. Take some time to spend with our daughter, and we'll treat it as a vacation." Sprigga hesitated before one of her branches tilted, as if nodding.
"We're almost there," she said softly,
and Giles could feel the tree was slowing down, a blue planet appearing not far away. Giles observed the planet for a long moment, taking in its characteristics. There was very little land, occupying less than a tenth of the planet's surface.
Do you want to put her in the water or one of the islands? There was a moment of hesitation.
Let's put her on the largest landmass. Her wisdom won't be able to show itself properly if she is in an environment that restrains her options.
Giles nodded his head in agreement. Sprigga uprooted herself from the asteroid that they had been riding on, slowly descending towards the planet below. Although their descent was controlled, bursts of flame arose from her roots, dealing minimal damage to the tree goddess. Sprigga controlled herself to fall towards the largest island, silently taking root upon landing. Once she was down, Giles jumped up to her highest branch, collecting a golden fruit that was hanging from it. Inside, he could see the curled-up figure of a beautiful woman with golden skin. Giles plucked the fruit, jumping down to the bottom of the tree and tearing open the outer layer. Latia of Wisdom gasped as her eyes opened, looking up in confusion for a long moment. One of Sprigga's branches stretched over, placed over Latia's hand. In a moment, Latia's eyes flashed, knowledge rushing into her mind. This was the power of the Sylvans, to communicate and share knowledge with their ancestor trees. In that moment, Sprigga transmitted all of the knowledge that Latia would need to know to survive in this world, whether it was building a shrine of Aurevi, how to communicate with her sisters, or the use of commonly found materials. Latia offered a soft smile, rising to her feet and drying herself of the juice that had filled the fruit.
Thank you for giving birth to me, she bowed, both to Giles and the massive tree behind him.
Giles merely chuckled. In truth, he didn't have a hand in the birth of Sprigga's daughters. He couldn't even contribute any of his own energy, because the void and divinity did not mix properly. Despite this, Sprigga insisted that they were as much his daughters as her own.
Giles looked up at Sprigga's tree, choosing a suitably large branch.
Bear with it for a moment, he whispered to her, and the entire tree seemed to tense briefly.
Giles jumped into the air, using his hand like a knife to cut the branch off at an angle, grabbing it before it could fall. The branch was huge, easily more than 100 meters long, and Giles had to carefully hold it. While he descended, Latia was already digging a hole big enough to place the branch, having learned of this message from her mother. When Giles planted the cutting of the tree into the soil, Sprigga's body began to shine. She controlled the branch, reshaping it slightly to allow it to grow roots, and then cut it off from her own divinity. Like this, the branch still possessed divine might, but no consciousness to control it, leaving it as a normal ancestor tree. Latia walked forward, placing her hand on the new branch to share the information that Sprigga had given her back to this branch, instilling in it the basic knowledge that they would need in the future. At the same time, Sprigga rapidly shrank, turning into her sylvan form. One of her fingers was missing, but it quickly grew back under Giles' worried gaze. A week, Sprigga said, looking at Giles with a small pout. We'll stay for a week.
Giles sighed, knowing that he wouldn't be able to change her mind at this point. Rather, he hoped to get her to relax more over the next week, convincing her to extend the time until she had fully recovered her losses from cutting off so many portions of herself.
In that case, allow me to offer a residence for the two of you.
Latia smiled, natural energy swirling around her. The branches of the new tree extended, the tree itself starting to grow. Nearby, another tree formed from the roots of the first, rising up in a spiral pattern with a small opening at the front that resembled a doorway. Sprigga offered a small smile, nodding her head. It would take a year before the first Sylvans were born from the tree, so it didn't feel like a bad thing to spend some time with Latia before they left. Even with the wealth of knowledge Sprigga imbued with her, she was still young.
What do you plan to do now? Giles asked, turning to look at Latia, who thought it over.
According to the history you gave me, this world should be without animal life. However, monsters will begin appearing around the time the first children are born.
I don't know what type of monsters there will be, so I should make sure that I understand the terrain of this world and what resources are at my disposal. Additionally, I am curious about the contents of World Seed that you shared. If it is possible to achieve similar mutations with our tree, that would be for the best. Sprigga blinked in surprise.
Did I share anything about that game? She asked, as if questioning herself.
She hadn't intended to, because it would take too long to get the ability to connect to the game from this remote planet. Not to mention the headset. There was the need to lay the foundation for the cables. Latia merely smiled.
My power of wisdom lets me see what others would miss. You could say that I reconstructed various memories from the information that you gave me, with World Seed being just one of them. However, I was rather focused on it when I realized that it was related to our sisters.
Sprigga hesitated before nodding again. She wasn't expecting the power of wisdom to be something like that.
If you can really achieve suitable mutations, I don't think anyone would think poorly of it. Though, don't push yourself too much, okay?
Latia nodded her head.
Don't worry. I will make sure not to overburden the tree, she said, though Sprigga was more worried about Latia overburdening herself.
Giles chuckled from the side, thinking to himself, like mother, like daughter. Chapter 65 Cynthia Hill walked down the street of Deccan, her eyes roaming over the various sleek buildings. She had just finished the upgrade process for the three steps of perfection, and was now far more comfortable with her new form. Or rather, the entity that had hijacked her body was. The former head of research for the Gear Empire chuckled faintly, stroking her chin. Given that Gear never had a gender to begin with, it didn't much matter whether it was possessing a male or a female body.
I'll need to leave the research team. Or shall I fake my own death? She wondered to herself.
Ever since leaving its mechanical frame, the head's processing power had become far more limited. Unless it was a spell that it had previously constructed, it could no longer freely create fourth-tier magic, and would need to spend a few minutes with any spell that it desired to create.
Perhaps I could stage an explosion in her personal lab. I will just need to take care of the life mark, but there is no issue with that.
This research lab was quite strict with security, as every member was required to leave a sample of their key in a special device, which would detect their deaths. Additionally, everyone had the rest of the staff on their contacts list in the system. If not for the fact that she still felt bound by the power of fate, she would simply destroy the entire research base. However, that would no doubt trigger the terrifying power to ensure an unfortunate end for herself. If she wanted to do it that way, she would need to make sure that they first initiate a threat, giving her suitable reason to defend herself, as she did with the body she was currently possessing.
Sadly, there's no way to do so without me being the one to intentionally provoke them into action.
Cynthia wasn't sure just how strict the limitations of the power were, as it was beyond even the scope of fourth-tier magic. Thus, she had never been able to fully analyze it. With that being the case, it was always best to assume that it was as strict as possible. Now that she had decided how she wanted to break away from her current research group, all that was left was planning what to do after she had left. Would she try to join the Another World research group? Maybe she should start her own group. Despite the great power that the head of research had possessed in the past, it had never been a fighter. That had ultimately been the cause of its first death, with the second being even less avoidable due to interference directly from the void. Now that she had a third chance at life, she had to play it carefully.
There's probably not going to be another chance to bring back the gear, she thought sadly to herself, having been working on that prior to the events of V-Day.
Unfortunately, all of her efforts had gone to waste.
Either way, the first thing that she needed to do was take care of her current identity. Cynthia had a private lab under her house in which she conducted her personal research projects. She made her way there with a smile on her face, looking like she was going to be getting to work as normal. Even before the head possessed her, Cynthia believed that her boss had installed hidden monitoring devices within her lab, so these devices had been easily uncovered by her new mind. Of course, they were left in place to avoid suspicion. Having video evidence recording her death would only add further credibility to her claims. The research project that Cynthia was working on at the moment was a chemical experiment. She had various vials and beakers filled with chemical agents, as well as refined essences of basic energies. Once in the basement, she grabbed her lab coat, speaking up for the audio recorder.
Dr. Hill, Research Log 8312. Today I will be attempting to add liquid key essence to Agent B-37. According to my calculations, this should result in at least a 20% increase in the agent's healing properties.
Cynthia smiled as she walked to her research table, grabbing the vial of light green fluid, as well as a smaller beaker of blood-red liquid. She had done extensive research on this combination. In truth, it would likely have the effect that she said, if she added it in the right proportions. However, if the amount was incorrect, it would cause a massive explosion.
Terminal, activate the blast protection field, she called out. According to standard procedure, the lab shrouded in a thin barrier that would prevent any explosions from escaping. Even if there was a catastrophic failure, it was better to lose only one researcher rather than an entire city block. Administering 50 millimeters of key essence. Lifting the vial of key, Cynthia carefully measured the amount that she was pouring into the green liquid. Once she saw it starting to bubble up, she showed an expression of excitement before quickly shifting to one of panic.
No, the balance was wrong, she cried out in alarm, throwing the bottle to the other side of the room.
On the surface, this was an instinctive reaction to get the explosion as far away from her as possible, to ensure her survival. However, the place that the bottle was thrown towards was where the other energy essences had been kept. As soon as the explosion rang out, Cynthia triggered the spell that she had set in advance. Immediately, a number of events happened all at once. Within the lab, Cynthia's body appeared to be consumed by an eruption of chaotic energies. Within the research offices, her life mark suddenly shattered. And finally, her name disappeared from everyone's contacts list within the system. With all of that taken care of, Cynthia appeared in an alley more than a kilometer away from her house, her figure rapidly shifting into that of a teenage elf. Though, even an elf that appeared in her teens was still probably more than 80 years old. Her outfit was only lightly charred, and that was quickly taken care of with just a moment of thought. With a smile on her face, she walked out of the alley, ready to find the next chapter in her life, now free from most constraints. Chelsea sat at her desk, poring over the group's latest project. Due to the fact that they no longer needed to be strictly dedicated to researching void defenses, they had returned to their initial focus of energy research. Everyone in the research group had been given the assignment to try to uncover a new energy type that was not recorded in the Mitong's energy database. For Chelsea and James, they had personally given themselves a higher goal, which was to each discover a new saint-level energy.
I keep telling you, you can't mix the key there, a bone wand spoke up from the side of Chelsea's desk. If you just mix that in haphazardly, it will explode.
Chelsea rolled her eyes, disregarding the words of the bone wand. After learning that it didn't have any inherently harmful properties, she had not only allowed its continued existence, but made it an unofficial member of the research team. And I keep telling you that you are not an expert on this subject. You can barely create the formula for spatial key.
Save the hard stuff for people that know what they're doing.
I may be just a stick, but I can think for myself, thank you, the wand replied indignantly.
Chelsea simply ignored the talkative wand. Ever since it had been discovered and allowed to join the team, it had opened up more and more. It did its best to learn from everyone, though it wasn't all that talented when it came to energies. It was trying its best to learn. Sometimes they just wished that it would try to learn a bit more quietly.
I'm just missing a few key pieces, Chelsea thought to herself, analyzing the energy formula that she had created thus far.
The energy that Chelsea wanted to create would allow her to create security nodes with a bare minimum amount of energy. Borrowing from the idea of the servant energy, these nodes would possess a sense of awareness, capable of automatically reporting when something happened. At the same time, they could serve as the key component of a lock, only allowing the lock to be undone if Chelsea herself would open it. This was the great security energy that she had always wanted. Hopefully, it will even be able to integrate with local defenses. But we'll see how that goes. To create this energy, Chelsea had studied both World Sight and the Servant Energy, hoping to create a proper union between them. The energy itself didn't need direct offensive capabilities, but she would thoroughly